Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Mac, and you are listening to Mac's Musings. And I'm going to be dialing my guest. So if you just give me a minute here. And her name is Morgan Laraya. Some of you may know her. And after she's on my show, you will at least know her a little bit. So it will be dialing here shortly. And hopefully everything works out. Ah, ringing. Morgan.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
This is Mac. Can you hear me? Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you well. Can you hear me?
Good. Yes, I can. That means we're on the air, which is a good thing.
It
doesn't
awesome.
Always happen that way with Blog Talk Radio. So how are you feeling tonight?
Oh, I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm okay, you know. SSDD, like I always say.
I hear you.
Yeah. Okay, well, I guess the first question that I want to ask you is, usually I ask just about everybody this, when did you realize that you wanted to be in the filmmaking business?
Well, I always wanted to be an actress, and so I did that within my own community. And then I moved to LA, and I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, and I studied a lot and trained, and I'm like first and foremost a theater nerd, and fell in love with the process, but also knew that I needed to work on it more. And so when I went out into the world and I started auditioning and seeing what that was like and learning the business of it, because I was just really naive and I didn't really know what I was doing. I still don't. But I was just finding that I wasn't really fulfilled with the scripts I was auditioning for, and I didn't really see myself in them. I'm pretty tall and I'm a bit bigger, and, you know, I would always get these notes that I was too strong and that I had too much of a strong presence, and I didn't really know what that meant, and I still don't really know what that means. But I ended up auditioning for a USC film student who we just immediately hit it off. If there's like love at first sight, that was definitely what it was. In a platonic way. And I started starring in his student films, and we were collaborating together, and then we started writing together. And I knew that if I really wanted to be in the roles I really felt fulfilled by, I would have to start creating it myself, because I was, you know, hanging out with these USC students and learning a lot and seeing what they were doing, and I was feeling so inspired. So he and I started writing a feature script, and we had absolutely no idea what we were doing. And then we realized it was taking forever, so we ended up making a short together, and it was really fulfilling and amazing, and it was super, super, super low budget, and just a really overall positive experience. And making a short film is a lot of work, like making a feature film, and it's a lot of the same work too. Like, you know, we made a website, we made a poster, we, you know, did social media for it, we did marketing. So when you make a feature film, it was just, it's just bigger. But I didn't really realize that at the time, but I knew that with the short that I could only get so far. And now I think there's a lot more options for short films. But at the time we were pretty limited, and I really wanted to like get this seen by people and maybe make some money off of it, which is just impossible usually for a short, maybe not so much now, but definitely then. This was in 2011, 2012. And I knew that I wanted to make a feature. I was really passionate about that. And I ended up meeting a collaborator, and together we made a feature film, and that was also really fulfilling.
What was the name of that short film? Because I don't want to go over it again if it's on my list. What was the name of it, that short you were talking
about? It's called Two Star with the number two. Apparently I'm very fond of numericals in my film titles, which I didn't know at the time, but when you get into film festivals, it's actually a benefit, because then you're like listed first, so people see your title first, and maybe they'll go and see your film more. So Two Star, and I made it with Jacob Halajian. He directed it. We wrote it together. I acted in it. There was another actor named Franklin Killian. We had an amazing DP named Diego. It was really great, and, you know, it was 100% a passion project, and But it was really, really positive, and I fell in love with the process.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad that you did, because you are an excellent actress. I've never seen you give a bad performance.
You're very kind. Thank you.
Let me see, what else did I want to ask you? Oh, yes. I see that on IMDb, and of course, they don't always have everything updated, but that's what I'm going by. You only have one directing credit. Now, is this because you haven't had another opportunity, or you don't really like directing? Or some other reason?
It's kind of... I wanted to try my hand at directing, and this was a very small short. I wanted to see what it was like, and it was just to get my feet wet. And it's definitely something I'm interested in doing more. I think one of the things I really learned from making Fifth Passenger was that I really love creative input, and I like being a part of that process. And then, so I thought I would try it, and I did enjoy it. And I haven't really been focusing on it as much, but it's definitely something I'm interested in. Since Fifth Passenger came out, I've been writing a lot more and being a part of a couple smaller projects and auditioning here and there. But I hope for my next project, it is something I would like to direct it or to co-direct it. But we'll see.
Okay. Well, since we're talking about that anyway, the directing, you had done that on that, you mentioned that it was a short, but for the listeners, the name of it was Colony One. So can you give like a synopsis? I know that you were the producer and writer and actor and the director, like we just said, but if you could give a short synopsis of it, that would be nice.
Yeah, so it's really a concept piece for my current script that I expanded, and it started with this question of, I don't know if you've ever seen Mars One, but there was like a competition, like, yeah, so I was really inspired by Mars One, and it just got me thinking, like, well, why would you leave Earth? What about Earth? Who would want to leave this amazing planet and knowing the environment on Mars or the environment on another planet? What would make a person want to do that? Because it's a very brave thing to do. And watching a bunch of videos from Mars One, I was really inspired. So the premise of Colony One is this woman is preparing to go and colonize Mars and being part of the first wave. And it's her process of letting go of Earth. And then I took that concept and I parlayed it into a feature film that I wrote out. And I'm currently shopping around. I changed it to Titan after doing some research about Titan and the atmosphere on Titan and the environment of Titan, I think would lend itself really well to a human colony in many aspects, a bit more than Mars, because the atmosphere is thicker, it's denser. There's almost all the elements in the air except for oxygen, but there's, you know, nitrogen and methane. And so there's a lot more to work with opposed to Mars. And with Titan, you could live above ground, but with Mars, if we are going to colonize Mars, we're going to have to live underground because of the radiation. So I really hadn't seen anything that had embraced Titan in that particular way. And it's so cinematic, the landscape of Titan. So I kind of took that and ran with it. But yeah, so that's what Colony One is about. And it was a really great experience. And I worked with a man named Brian, who is actually in Fifth Passenger. And he's somebody I'd met in an acting class, and we collaborated a lot on scenes and worked together a bit. And so he's great to work with, and I can always ask him for favors, and that's what I did. And yeah.
Oh, well, sounds exciting. Well, since you mentioned Fifth Passenger, yeah, we're starting like near the end instead of starting at the beginning, but that's okay. We don't have to go in any chronological order. Fifth Passenger, obviously I've seen that. Several of my friends are in that, you know, including you. We may only know each other on Facebook, but I still consider Facebook friends my friends. Acted, produced. Yeah, yeah, and of course you wrote, like you mentioned earlier. So for the people listening that may not have seen it, give them a synopsis and then talk about what that experience was like. And By the way, people, this movie is awesome. It's really, really great. So go ahead, Morgan. Tell them all about it.
Oh, well, thank you for saying that. So Fifth Passenger is about these crew members who the mothership has collapsed, floating, and they go onto this escape pod. And the pod is really only meant for four people. And so they're running out of air and food, and there's all this tension and fighting, and the pod is broken. And so right when they fix it and they think they're going to be saved, this alien comes on and starts attacking them. And what I'm really proud of with it is that there's several themes that I think are really compelling and that spoke to me, and when it came out, there was a lot of conversation about immigration in this country, and we didn't plan it. You know, we had been working on this film for so long and trying to get it completed for a very long time, and it just happened to come out during this national conversation. And so a lot of people thought it was commentary we were making, but it literally was just coincidence that we had been able to finish this film, and it came out during this particular time. And the premise of the idea started from Scott Baker, who also directed the movie and co-wrote it and produced it as well, and did a bunch of other things. Steadicam, he did a lot. He had this idea about this woman in an escape pod and this escape pod scenario. And I met Scott through a filmmaker group, an independent filmmaker group, and I had seen one of his short films that ended up winning the Inland Empire. It was like a 48-hour film festival film, which I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's such a great idea to just like force yourself to make a short film. Yeah, yeah. And so he had done that, and he had won the Inland Empire competition that particular year. And I ended up watching it, and it was around the time that I had finished Two Star and started submitting that to festivals. And we got into this festival in Italy, and Scott is also an editor, and he ended up helping with subtitles for Italy. And so he saw some of my work, and I saw his work, and he approached me with this premise and said, like, would you like to write this with me? Because I think you'd be really great for this character. And, you know, growing up, because of the way I look and my height and everything, Sigourney Weaver was always someone that I was always very interested in, because she's interesting looking and she's very tall and, of course, very talented and amazing. And so when he told me this idea, I was like, oh, well, it's very similar to Aliens. and I thought it was a great idea. And so I said yes, and we set out and we started working on it together. And when we had a rough draft, he ended up doing Steadicam on a shoot with Manu Itarami, and he told Manu about the script, and it was something, you know, he already started mentally casting and kind of reached out some feelers and to some Star Trek people in particular. And he mentioned this to Manu, and Manu read the script and really liked this one role, who we ended up playing later, Thompson. And through Manu, we met Tim Russ, and we ended up making this concept short for the film, because Scott and I had, you know, really worked on this script and ended up bringing in another writer, who Henry Martin, who helped us really shape it and do a page one rewrite and map it all out. And that was such an education for myself. I should have been reading more, quite frankly, about screenwriting. And because, you know, writing is, I would argue that writing is probably the most difficult, because you're really, you know, you're creating this document upon which everyone stands. It's really hard. And so great writing is just the most beautiful thing in the world. So we really worked on that new draft, and then we were shopping it around and like pitching it. We went to AFI and pitched it to anyone who would listen. And, Scott was an unknown. I'm an unknown. It's a really big film. And we didn't really get any traction, but we made this concept short, and it was really empowering. And I think it really helped us in a lot of ways. And people for a long time had told us, you know, you should crowdfund. And Scott and I just were not really interested in that, because we knew how much work it was going to be. And so we'd always just shut it down. But then a man and a woman named Mark and Elaine Zikri had their own crowdfunding experience to crowdfund their own project. And they ended up having these sets, these gorgeous sets And there was some lag time, and they had time for us to film there, and they made it possible for us to do that. And I will forever be grateful for them because, you know, with Fifth Passenger, it's in space. You're in a spaceship, among other things, and we couldn't really just, like, take this film and pick up a camera and shoot it anywhere. Like, it was very specific. And so when they did that, we realized that we needed some money to pay people, and we crowdfunded, which is how I met you. And and it really started coming together, and I was just amazed that we got the support we did, and the Star Trek community helped us so much. They made it possible, and friends and family, of course, but the Star Trek community is just amazing, and I'm forever grateful to them. And we had enough money to film the movie, which we did, of course, for 17 days, and then we had a lag time because we didn't have money, and so we had to start that process over again. And I know, you know, a lot of people would tell you that that was dumb. And I agree, it was dumb. But it was also the type of thing that had we not done that, that this movie would never get made. And so I think it's also important to just say yes to life and see where it takes you. And I'm so grateful that we did that because there was a lot of downtime and it was really difficult. But we ended up finding the money and completing the film. And we got picked up by Epic Pictures for distribution. And they've been great to work with. And they got it out there, and we got some international territories that were interested in it. And yeah, and now the movie's been out for a while, a couple years, and it's done well, I think, for, you know, our first film and certainly an indie film this small. And I feel really lucky for the whole experience. And it was an education, and it was challenging, but it was amazing and really thrilling.
Well, I agree. I showed it, because I have my own copy, I showed it at a family gathering. This was, you know, before the COVID. I showed it at a family gathering, and every single person liked it. And this was a gathering of family members that they don't necessarily all like the same type of movies, you know, but they all liked it because, yes, it's sci-fi, but it also has a little bit of everything. It's got drama. It's got romance. It's got mystery. It's got a little bit of everything in there. So there's something for everybody. Oh, including explosions, if you like explosions.
there's some action. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's like a little bit of everything. And then, of course, you have the good acting. And so everybody was just going on and on about how good the movie was. And then so then they started asking me about the different people in the film, you know, like including you. And so I was telling them all about you. And most of them already knew about Manu because I've known him for years. But they were asking me about some of the other people, and I was telling them. And they were, like, all interested after seeing this movie. And they were asking me about some of your other works. Because they thought you were so great in this movie. One family member, it was one of my nieces, told me that you, now don't take this the wrong way because it kind of sounds bad when it comes out, but it actually is a compliment, and she meant it that way. She said that when you had scenes with Marina Sirtis, you were almost as good as she was.
Well, I'm very flattered. Tell her I said thank you.
Yeah, I will. Well, like I said, it, when it comes out, it kind of sounds bad, but it actually is meant as a compliment. And she is a really great actress. So if you're anywhere near her, yeah, that is a compliment.
No, I totally agree. You can't touch Marina. I mean, all of them, you know, they were Armin. You know, when you're editing a film, you watch it a kabillion times. And watching it, I fell in love with Armin so much because just the more you watch his performance, the more you see how nuanced it is. And he's so present and he's just incredible. And he was great to work. I mean, they were all amazing to work with. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, these are amazing professional actors that we will always remember. And it was really incredible being able to work with them. But yes,
well,
please tell your niece I said thank you.
Oh, I will. I will. And most of my family members have been really excited because I told them I'm going to have you on the show. And they're like, what? I've had family members that haven't listened to one single show of mine that said, now I don't know if they will or not, but they said that they're going to listen to your show, even though they haven't listened to any other of my shows. I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at my family members because it's like, yeah, just all of a sudden you're going to listen to my show. Yeah, thanks a lot. I mean, it was nice for you.
I get it. You would like a little more support.
Right. So I kind of, yeah, I mean, obviously I took it the right way. I told him, oh, well, that's nice. Yeah, that would be nice if you listened. And then I also added, and it would also be nice if you listened some other times too. And then, of course, they just laughed. Well,
yeah.
Sorry to go off on myself there.
No, no problem.
I tend to.
It's pretty funny.
I kind of do that sometimes. And what's funny is a lot of the guests, that's actually what they like about being on my show, because I've been told by a couple of my guests that it's not like any other show that they were on. So, I take that the good way. I don't take it in a bad way. So we're going to backtrack a little bit and go back to like 2007. You did something called Kipsy Tapes. Now, was that your first acting job?
Yeah, it was my first professional acting job because I actually got paid, and it was made. So I used to work at Starbucks because it's actually, they're very kind to their workers, and I had a medical problem, and this country, I couldn't get health care. I wasn't a minor anymore. I had absolutely no health care. No one would touch me. And someone told me about Starbucks, and if you just work there 20 hours a week, you get this amazing healthcare. So I started working there, and it was actually a really good place for me at the time. So I was working there, and I met these two brothers. They would come in, like, every day for these, like, huge coffees. And they, like, it was in Los Feliz, and they just lived down the street. And I got to know them, and they were so kind, and they were writing this screenplay, which ended up being the Poughkeepsie Tapes. And they gave me a small role in it, which was really, really generous of them. And it ended up going to Tribeca and premiering in Tribeca and launching their careers. And they've done very well since then. They've done a lot of projects. But that was the first one. That was what put them on the map. And me, I learned a lot from being on that set. And it was great seeing an indie film set and watching people work and seeing just how everything plays around one another. And they always really inspired me. I think I really saw what they did, and I saw how they created their own way, and I thought that was really incredible. And I think it was part of the reason I started making my own work as well, you know, just all these signs just saying, you know, you should do this, because, you know, I'm impatient and I'm just really passionate about acting, and I wanted to act more, so why not, you know?
And what was that about? The thing itself.
Oh, okay. So it's, you know, these tapes are discovered in upstate New York and Poughkeepsie, and they're serial killer tapes, so it's all about him murdering people. Played like this, you know, students learning forensics, I believe it was forensic, you know, police academy something. And it was very, very minor. But it was great. And again, like, I learned a lot, and they had a great time, and they've been so successful. They made Waco, I believe, most recently. But they also made, oh my gosh, they made Quarantine, which I believe Doug Jones was in. They've done really, really well. And I mean, they totally deserve it. They're honestly, it was so funny because, you know, I would see them every day, sometimes twice a day, three times a day. Cause they'd come in and get these coffee refills, and Sean in particular, and I would talk to him, and nicest man, both of them, just so nice. And then when I read the script, I was amazed because, you know, it was so horrific and gruesome, and I just couldn't believe that this thing came out of their brain because they were just so nice. But that was their first their first big film, and it did really, really well, and I was really proud of them.
Wow, that sounds like a really nice experience.
It was. I feel really lucky that I was able to be a part of it.
Aw. Well, I'm glad, too, because that got you into the business and then got you into all these other things you did and then got you to Fifth Passenger and beyond. So I'm glad, too, because now we have your work to look at.
Aw, thanks, Mac.
Aw, you're quite welcome. Okay, well, in 2008, you did a short called Waiting in Blue, and I picked this one because you also produced it. So now I may not be right, but I'm assuming that this was your first foray into producing. So if you want to give like a short synopsis and then talk about that for a little bit.
Sure. So I was spending a lot of time in Germany, and I was doing some theatrical projects there, and I was going back and forth. And I was just really having a great time doing that. And I made this short film with somebody, and it was his idea. He also really helped inspire me to create my own work as well, because in Germany, it's totally different. You know, it's more socialist. There's free education. The healthcare is amazing. It really opened my eyes to a lot of things and the way things are in this country and how things are in other countries. And I got a really big education there. And in Germany, they have grants for the arts, which just sounded like heaven to me. And you literally, you know, you create a project and you apply to these grants and you get them or not. And so he suggested, you know, why don't you start creating your own work? Because that was just where his headspace was. And at the time, it was something I still wasn't really thinking I could personally do. And so we made this short film together, and I went to some film festivals in Germany, and, you know, we got like a little write-up in the newspaper, and we're like on the front page of like the culture section. And it was just a really fun time. And it was a great experience, really. And then things didn't, you know, I realized I was learning German and studying German, but I wasn't German. And I would, you know, since I had really only been studying it for like a couple of years, I really had a thick accent. And I auditioned a little bit, but I kept getting this feedback that I had an accent. And I just realized that, you know, I live in Los Angeles. Maybe I should stay here a little bit longer and try my luck here before I seek out other pastures. And so I ended up just staying in Los Angeles and that. But I took everything that I learned there and on a lot of levels, and I brought it back with me, and, you know, it helped form me, really.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an experience, and any new experience, even if it's a bad experience, which, you know, it doesn't sound like it was a bad experience, but even a bad experience helps shape you. You learn from your bad experiences as well as your good experiences. So any experience is a good thing.
Oh, I totally agree. And if I had one regret in life, which of course I do, it would be that I didn't experience more, like I didn't try more. And I think I forget who said it, you know, there's this famous quote about, like, you know, failing is only not trying. So, you know, basically what you're saying, whenever you try and you put yourself out there and you make something, you create something, it's very vulnerable, but it's also very empowering. And maybe it's terrible, but I've always been grateful of everything that I've ever created, because I think it's really important. And you're absolutely right. Like, every time you do it, you get a little smarter, you learn more about your voice and what you want and what you don't want, and you move forward. But yeah, Germany was incredible, and I think it's such a great country, and it was really formative in a lot of ways.
Well, I'm going to go a little bit forward, not too far forward. Actually, it's about the same year as Two Star. You did something called Lost Heroes. That was also a short. You acted in that. And so, I can assume that it's about some heroes, but I'm going to let you give the synopsis and then talk about that one a little bit.
Sure. So that was actually made through the collective that I mentioned earlier of independent filmmakers, where I met Scott Baker. And we just decided, they decided to do a bunch of 48-hour film festival shorts. And that was the genre that was chosen. It was superheroes. And this was before superheroes, you know, really are what they are today. And, but it was just, it was a really fun project. And yeah, and to collaborate and any chance to act is amazing. And so that's what that was. And really out of all of that, I mean, I got to work on my craft a little bit, but what was great about that collective was that I met Scott Baker. So.
Oh yeah, that worked out really well.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see, what other one can we talk about? Because you've got quite a few here, so I'm just like picking ones out. A little bit more forward to like 2013, Working Out the Kinks, which is another short. You acted and you wrote the story and you also produced that one. So if you could give a short synopsis and then tell us about working on that one.
Sure. So it was about, again, another 48-hour film festival that my friends were doing. And they, I forget what the genre was, but it, the premise we came up with was, you know, a couple having marital issues and they go on this adventure together, and through all sorts of weird experiences, they end up coming together at the end. So it's, you know, kind of like a dark love story. Again, you know, it was friends that were really inspired to make something, and so they did. And I was really lucky to be a part of it and work with them. And my input was minimal. Like, I did help produce it a bit, but it was really more their project, and they invited me on. And I played this therapist and got to use my therapist voice. so, but yeah, it was a fun project, and I was glad I was able to be a part of it.
Okay, there's another one here. I picked this one because I like the title. Starship Rising, you acted in that one. So for the listeners, give a short synopsis and then tell us about working on that one. Sounds interesting.
Yeah, so that, you know, leads us more up to the present, and that was by Neil Johnson. And Neil Johnson is incredible in that he writes and directs and produces and does the visual effects for his own movies. And when we made the Fifth Passenger concept short, it was actually on his set. He let us film there the day after Thanksgiving. And so he helped support Fifth Passenger in a lot of ways as well. But I knew him, he knew my work, and, you know, he's constantly making these sci-fi movies. And he's constantly meeting new actors, and he asked me to come on to play this role. And he pitched it as Game of Thrones in space. So there's all these characters and all these storylines coming together, and there's all these different worlds that everyone's coming from, and people are in space or from a planet, and chaos ensues, and there's drama. And I played kind of like this Amazonian warrior type from this very strong female planet, and who were like liberating themselves from their oppressors. And but it was really fun, and it was also really interesting working with Neil, because again, Neil does all this stuff, which is just so admirable, but he uses a lot of green screen. So as an actor, it was really fun to really work on visualizing everything, because, you know, the sets were pretty minimal and you really just had to imagine everything as best you could, and work on that a lot. And that was great. And I really loved, I was a sidekick to this other character, basically. And the other woman, her name is Christina Moses. And she was so much fun to work with. She was very, you know, cracking a lot of jokes and a bit vulgar, which I just adore. And so we were laughing a lot. And she's a really incredible person. And she's had a really good career ever since then. She's been doing really great work. And she's, you know, gorgeous. But yeah, so that was a really positive experience too. And again, like, Neil Johnson, hats off, because he works so hard and he's constantly making stuff, just constantly working on a new project. And the minute one comes out, he's on to the next one and creating it. And I just think that's incredible.
Yeah, it is, really.
Mm-hmm. Because it's hard work, and
Yeah. Well, yeah, everything is hard. I mean, acting is hard. People think that it's easy, but it's not. And there's more to it than just memorizing your lines, too. I mean, I've done some acting in no way, you know, like professional per se. I mean, I was on the stage, but local stage. And there's just so much to it, so much more than what people realize. And
yeah,
when
it's
you
so
get
funny.
To film, yeah. Well, like I was saying on another show, that people don't realize what all goes into a movie, that something looks easy, but it's not. You may have two guys sitting on the ocean, and there's nothing there but water, and they're on a boat, and so it looks easy because there's nothing there but the water, but that's actually very difficult to get filmed. And
mm-hmm.
then anything underwater is really hard to film, but people don't think about that. And in a lot of ways, that goes to the brilliance of the filmmakers, that they are able to just let people watch that without thinking. In some ways, that's a good thing because they don't even realize it. Like with editing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you carry on. I disagree with you entirely, but please carry on.
Oh, all I was going to say was that, like with editing, a good editor makes the movie, and most people never notice that there even is an editor until they make some mistakes. And then they start noticing, well, they needed to have a different editor or whatever. And, but other than that, they don't notice, because if there's a good editor, they never notice. And I do. Being a film reviewer, I notice things like that. If you've got a good editor in your movie, I'm going to notice that. I know when you've got good directing. I know when you've got good cinematography. I know when you've got good whatever, music, sound. If the sounds go with what they're supposed to go with, yeah. I know all of that stuff from being a reviewer. So
you're absolutely
again, sorry
right.
about
yeah.
sorry about going off a little bit.
No, it's
now
it's true though.
Yeah, the same year you did, at least I think it was the same year, something called Pending, and that was another short. I don't know if it was the same 48-hour. Thing or whatever, but anyway, you acted in that, so if you want to give a short synopsis and talk about that a little bit.
Oh, this is terrible, but it was really, I was just helping out a friend, and so I can't remember all of it. I had a very small role in it, so I think it was about two characters almost like in like purgatory, I believe. But I was just there for one day, and I was basically a glorified extra, and it was just something I did to help somebody out. But it was fun, and they were kind. Yeah, I feel bad because I don't even know. I can't even remember what it was really about. But yeah.
Oh, that's okay. People can't be expected to remember everything. And going a little more forward, something that you did, it was a TV series called The Hench Blog. Now, I have no idea what that is, and you acted in that. So if you would tell us about that.
Sure. So it's made by a man named Reed, and it's his passion project. And he was also someone that I met from this film collective where I met Scott. And he knew my work, and he liked it, and he asked me to be a part of it. And he's someone that he also teaches, so this was truly a passion project and something he just tried to do in off hours and to create. And it's about a bunch of henchmen and, you know, their antics. It's, you know, it's very funny and silly, a bit zany, but it was fun to work on. And he's been trying to. He had plans to do it again this year and shoot more episodes of it, but unfortunately, due to COVID, he kind of had to put that on pause
right.
for a little bit.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's messed up a lot of things. I mean, all over the world, but including Hollywood, a lot of people don't realize that either. Well, you know, to make a movie, you've got to get people together at least some of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, and you're together often for a very long day, and, you know, and I do know that there is some production going on, and I do know that there people have been finding ways around it, but often it involves quarantining people for 2 weeks and lots of testing. And so I think, you know, these smaller projects really have their work cut out for them because they don't necessarily have the budget for something like that. But I believe, you know, I'm really interested in what kind of stories are going to come out of this starting next year, and what we're going to see, and what that zeitgeist and how everyone has captured this moment is going to look like. I'm very, very curious. And also I believe in, like, you know, the creativity of artists. And I think people will find a way to work around this once we get a bit settled in it more, or maybe once things are lifted, but I'm very curious as to what that will look like.
Yeah, there's quite a few filmmakers that have been doing things like having people not actually phone it in, but, you know, like put it on video and send it over the internet, what have you, for whatever their part is, and it remote, doing things remotely.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my filmmaker friends, the whole movie came about from the COVID-19, the whole COVID-19. That's actually where he got the idea from, because of happened to quarantining and all that. And that's, I don't believe that's in the movie, but it has to do with aliens and things like that. So he had people do their own little parts, and then he would like splice them in. I think he's still working on it, but he did do some filming where people would actually be there, but they were actually making sure that they followed the regulations as far as having their masks and being far enough apart and all of that stuff. And so far it looks like it's going to be a hoot, because it's, you know, kind of funny. Because, you know, aliens, and they're shooting people with laser guns, and it's a silly thing. And one of the reasons why he did it, like, in a silly way is because if you would tell somebody about this from, like, say, 20 years ago, they'd be like, oh, come on. How are you going to make a movie if you can't be together in the same room? How are you going to make a movie? And I remind people that that's been being done for years, because a lot of times when you got these movies, sometimes when the actors are in a scene together, they're actually not even in the same room. They're just such good actors that you can't tell that they're not in the same room together. And that's why they go from putting the camera on one to putting the camera on the other. And it just works out so well, because you've got really great actors. Now, if you don't have great actors, it may not work out so well, but I digress. That's been being done for years, where people are not in the same room when they do stuff. So that's actually nothing new. But having to do it for the entire film, yeah, that's new. The same year, oh, I'm sorry, you were going to say something. You go right ahead.
That reminds me of this story that I was told back in acting school about Marlon Brando doing On the Waterfront. And in his contract, he was able to leave the set, I think it was at 1 p.m. every day, to go to a psychoanalyst. That was, like, in his contract. He agreed to do this movie, but he needed to be done right at this particular time to go to a psychoanalyst. And so there's that infamous scene of him and the actor playing his brother, and they're in the back of the cab with, like, the French blinds. And Marlon Brando, they got the coverage for that scene on Marlon, and then he left set. And all of the acting done by the other actor who played his brother, that was all to nothing. And if you watch that scene now, I mean, it's so heartbreaking and so moving, and he does such a great job. But I always really thought that was such an interesting story.
Well, a very good example of what we're actually talking about right now is Eddie Murphy, when he did that movie where he was redoing the Jerry Lewis movie, and he was playing Professor Kelp, and he was playing different parts, and he would film one. He played like 7 different parts, I think, and so he was at this table with a bunch of his the family members, and he would do one person's part and film that, and then he'd film another part and then another part. But when the movie was all spliced together, you would never know that it wasn't people sitting at a table, because he was that good. And I'm not saying he's the best actor in the world or anything, but because he's a good actor and they put it together so well, and that, of course, has to do with the editing, it turned out really, really good. So there you go.
He's so talented.
Can do
definitely.
It. Yes, yes. Okay, so moving back to you, though, since it is your show, you did something called Everyone is Doing Great. That was another short. You acted in that. So give us a short synopsis and tell us a little bit about that one.
So that was executive produced by my friends Ian and Esham Holmes, and another amazing brother partnership duo. They both direct these movies. And I had helped them with voiceover on another project, and I had known them for a very long time. And this is actually a project that James Lafferty and Steve Coletti created together, and it's actually a TV series that they've been pitching to networks, I believe, during this whole time. But on IMDb, it shows up as a short. But really, I was in an episode I was asked to be, and, you know, they had a bunch of roles they needed to fill. And it's just hilarious. And it's, you know, they met each other on One Tree Hill, and it's basically based off of their experiences in Hollywood. And so there's amazing, just like wacky stories. And James Lafferty directed it as well, which was pretty incredible, because I think, you know, anyone who can act and then direct as well at the same time, I mean, it's just amazing. And it was a really neat project in that a lot of it is improv. So they would come up with these scenarios when I got the script and I was reading it. They had these really well fleshed out scenarios, and then the actors would show up and then just improvise around these scenarios. And that was actually the first time I'd ever really worked in that capacity. And I was very curious to what that would look like, because, you know, being a theater nerd, you know, the play, the writing is, you know, the be all end all, and you have to follow that. You know, it's like gospel. Because you have to honor this writer. And so I had never worked in that capacity, and it was really interesting to see how that played out. And I mean, there's just so much talent in Los Angeles, and to see these actors just start improvising around all this, these particular scenarios was really inspiring and really interesting, and people were hilarious. And it got, you know, zany. And then I've seen 3 episodes that they've cut, and I believe they've cut the entire series. I mean, certainly now during quarantine, I'm assuming that they have. And yeah, so I you know, I don't know. I hope it gets picked up. I'm sure they hope it gets picked up. But I haven't really heard if it has yet. But yeah, it was great, because the costume designer on that, Maggie, she worked on Harry Potter, and I just helped a friend out with a concept short for her script, and she got Maggie to be the costume designer as well. So I got to speak to Maggie a little bit, and she mentioned that they'd been shopping it around and it was doing really well. And but yeah, I hope for their sake and for the show's sake, it does get picked up, because it should be seen. It was hilarious. And it's just funny too, because it looks outrageous, but it's not that far-fetched once you realize, like, the antics that happen in this town. So.
Um, Well, let's see. You got another. You got actually two more that IMDb says. I mean, you got other ones that we didn't go over because we wouldn't have time. But I wanted to center more on the newer stuff. So there's two new ones left. So we've got 10 minutes. So I don't think it will take that long. But so we'll do what we can. Stay Inside. IMDb says that's completed. You acted in that. So if you want to give a short synopsis and then talk about that one for a couple minutes.
Sure. So I actually filmed that years ago, and I don't know why IMDb. I think it's just how you input the info. I'm not sure mm-hmm. why it ended up first. It might be because it didn't have a completion date or a start date or anything, but that was actually from a really long time ago, and it's about a zombie outbreak. And it was really fun to film. It was great, you know, zombies and chaos. And I haven't really gotten any updates on that, to be honest. So I don't know, you know, again, you know, as you mentioned, filmmaking is really hard. And so I hope they completed it, but I honestly, I'm not sure if it ever was completed. And then the other one I think you're going to talk about is Frenic. And that was another,
yes.
That was actually around the same time as well. And it was a while ago, and it was about, you know, basically an artist battling his inner demons and, you know, trying to make art and the voices in your head. And they had this nice actor. I mean, nice as in the concept. He was actually a bit of a mean character, but this actor played this character that was, you know, just all the negative thoughts that you hear as a creative person or probably anyone really, almost personified and materialized. And it, we follow this man on his journey to create, and it was good. It was, they did a good job with it. And again, it was, you know, these really passionate people really wanting to make something. And so they did, which I always just think is really admirable.
It sounds really, really good. So I hope both of those get completed and then get to come out because they sound really good. And it'll be nice to see you in them.
Aw, thanks, Mac. I hope so, too. I hope.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, I think it's important to, you know, finish it if you can. And I know sometimes things come up and you can't. But, you know, sometimes it just takes a long time. Sometimes it takes 10 years, and that's okay. It's annoying, of
yeah.
course, like we all want more and we want it to be over, but sometimes it just takes a while and you have to have space for that. So I hope so as well. I hope for these filmmakers. I believe Frenic was completed and I believe they got it out there in some capacity. I never saw a full copy of it. I never saw it, but I believe that they finished it and were, you know, moved on to other things.
Okay, one thing that I did want to give you a chance to talk about, there's only like a little under 7 minutes, but you probably wouldn't talk that long about it anyway, because I know you're big on the environment, and I saw your most recent posting, something about a Zero Waste Los Angeles group. Now, if you want to talk about that a little bit, like what they do as a group, just to let anybody know that is interested in the environment and trying to cut down on their waste. So if you want to go ahead and talk about that, you've got like 6 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I've always been really passionate about the environment, and it's part of how I was raised. It's also part of my makeup, and it's a hobby and something I'm really interested in. And around the time we were making Fifth Passenger, I was kind of already doing a lot of zero waste things, but I really started embracing the lifestyle. And the premise is we create so much garbage, and it's harming us, basically, and it's destroying the planet. And just because we can't see it, you know, it doesn't mean it's not there. And that, unfortunately, the government is probably not going to step in any capacity anytime soon. And the corporations that are creating this waste, you know, we were trained to be these amazing consumers, and we are, you know, we grew up in this consumerist society and this idea that more, 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 buy, but it's really taking its toll. And I think we're beginning to see that. You know, I'm in California and we see these wildfires, there's all these hurricanes. These events just keep getting more and more extreme, and climate scientists are predicting that we have, I believe it's like 10 years, 9 years now before things really start becoming catastrophic. And the truth is that we may have less, because we as a species have never experienced anything like this before. This is entirely new. And so while scientists can project what this will look like, they don't really know because we don't have all the data. So the idea of zero waste to me is something I'm really passionate about because I feel empowered. I think, you know, there's some anxiety about seeing and witnessing what's happening, and it feels like something I can do every day, which I can feel good about. And so there's just all these, like, you know, it's basically changing your habits. I shop at the farmer's market a lot, and so I use produce bags, or my dental floss is made out of silk, so it will decompose. I'm careful about what I eat. And, packaging is really difficult to avoid. But once you kind of get a system down, it actually isn't that difficult. And it feels great to be supporting small business, because when you start avoiding all these other things, you just inadvertently start shopping at smaller places. So you're not contributing to this inequality that is so rampant in this country, and the diminishing middle class. And so within this group, it's really just a Facebook group where we support each other, and people ask questions like, oh, what do I do with, you know, these markers, or, you know, how do I get rid of tennis shoes? And, you know, so it's really information and events and a bit of support, you know, like, oh, my partner doesn't live this lifestyle. What does everyone do? What has been your experience? And it's lovely. It's lovely, you know, to get more knowledge and more information. And I think the post you mentioned was TerraCycle, which is this company that takes, you know, we have this idea that our plastics are being recycled, but they're actually not. The majority of them are not. And that was a big marketing campaign by the oil company, which I learned about like last year, and I was just shocked about. So these things aren't really getting recycled at all. They're getting burned, or they sit there, or they ended up in our oceans, and very harmful to everything. So TerraCycle has this program where it's very expensive, so it's not really practical, I think, for a lot of people. But you buy a box, or you go somewhere where they have a box, and you can put particular items, hard to recycle items, into it. And then they have a whole system in place that breaks down these items. But really, with TerraCycle, I think TerraCycle should be your last choice. I think really the first choice is just to stop buying so much and stop buying plastic things, and to really, you know, shift the way that we live our lives, because it's, you know, just because we can't see it, it doesn't mean it's not there. You know, we were shipping all of our plastics to China up in 2018, and then we shifted that after they closed their doors to foreign plastics to Malaysia and Vietnam and Thailand, but they weren't really set up for this. And so it's just very harmful. It gets into the water, it gets into the air, children get sick. And now they're talking about, in the U.S., is lobbying for Kenya to start taking our plastics. So we're going to start bringing all of our trash to Africa. And, you know, I think, you know, you have such a big heart, and I know you see, you want what's best for everyone. And we see this inequality in this country. And to me, this is just one more example of us being not taking personal responsibility in a lot of ways, and trying to shove our stuff onto somebody else. And not being honest about what's going on. But I truly feel that people have the power to change this. And really, when people stop buying this stuff, these companies will shift. These companies will shift their packaging. These companies will shift the way they operate, because that's the capitalistic model. You know, you have to adapt to the market, or you die. And so that's why I'm so passionate about it. And that's why I talk about it. And I started this little blog as a hobby, just to show people, you know, like, it's not really that difficult. And in a lot of ways, you save money because you're not buying all this stuff anymore. You're buying secondhand, you're getting used things, you're getting free things from your neighbors, like in a buy nothing group on Facebook. So I'm really, and really doing this work is, and reading all just about the climate crisis has really shifted the stories I want to tell as well, and informed my art. And that feels really good as well, because I think that if we, and maybe this is just naive of me, but if we really got like a really powerful story about all of this, especially if it was narrative, I think people would really shift. You know, they talk about Avatar and how in a lot of ways that was actually a very, very much an environmental movie, and it really inspired people to look at things differently. And so I think, you know, as you know, like, movies are so powerful and these narratives are so powerful.
Right.
So I think if we just get the right one out there, I think it could be really impactful.
Yes, yes. And I don't mean to cut you off, and because I agree with you totally, but we're going to be cut off pretty soon anyway. So I don't know if you'll get cut off, and hopefully not, but usually at the end, I ask the guests to tell people what is the best way to get in touch with them. So if you would tell that.
Sure. I'm on Instagram at Morgan Laraya, and that's the best way to get a hold of me. Thank you so much for having me on the show. This was so great to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. It was great. You're very nice to talk to, very easy to talk to, and I loved having you on the show, and you might come back in the future, hopefully. Thanks a lot.
Sounds good, Matt.
Have a good night.
You too. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
You too. Bye.